Good morning.
Good morning.
Should've wore red, huh? I see you did. You don't think you got one? I probably have one somewhere. Hey, Don? Not projecting yet. Somewhat, more than we'd probably like to admit. If they all go down, you'll find out just how much. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
We're into Samuel. We're gonna get just up to the point where they pick, just before picking the king, and then pick up next week with that. So this is kind of get the preparation. They've asked for a king, and Doug talked about that last week. And this week, it's kind of how it all kind of rolls up to that. So I'm gonna be out of chapter 8, a little bit out of chapter 9 this morning in Samuel. So Samuel spoke all the words of the Lord to the people who had asked of him a king. He said, "This will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and place them for himself in chariots and among his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots. He will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and of fifties, and some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots." So this is a conversation between God and Samuel. Samuel's taking back what the people wanted. What's different about what's being said here? They prepared for war before. What's different?
Before, they didn't have any person who's led and organized and said, "Here's what we're going to do."
They had a judge.
A prophet who contacted God, and God said, "Here's what I want you to do."
Right. But they did have a judge. I mean, when they went up against the Philistines.
Well, this guy, he's actually speaking the words of God. God's speaking through him.
God speaking through the prophet. But there's, what's different about the army here? I mean, they had an army before, right? They raised up several hundred thousand if they needed them. What's different?
Typically, typically God told them how, right? There was one episode.
God told them how if they needed to. Remember he had that one victory he gave them with 300, right?
Yeah.
Said, you got too many, we need to get down.
Yeah, and take them down to the water, and however they drink, well, that's who you got.
Yep, yep. I kind of viewed it as, when you have a standing army, you got to feed it, you got to pay it, you got to equip it. Every time they've gone into battle before, what have they done? They went a call out, everybody came in. This is different. This is a standing army. And putting that together and feeding it, because you need the fields to plow. What do you need the fields for? Because you got to feed them. Okay, so this is different. And God's trying to tell them, it's going to be different, guys. It's going to cost you money. You're not going to be happy. How much of an impact is that going to be?
Well, actually, it's good.
Government creates commerce?
Well, no, it depends on how they do it. But
this is the king, and this is the king, and he's taking it.
Should provide jobs for them.
They got to support an army. This is going to be substantial input. They're going to have to give up what they have, and you know how they like giving up what they have. They didn't like it at all. So, he will also take your daughters for perfumers and cooks and bakers. He would take the best of your fields and your vineyards and of your olive groves and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and your best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day.
So it's actually becoming a curse, even though they will get jobs and stuff, but like I said, eventually it's going to make them go too far and expect too much.
He says, this is going to happen really fast.
Right.
This is going to happen under Saul.
Well, it's a curse, basically, for asking.
Well, who's their king right now? Right now, who's their king? God's their king. He's their king. Remember he said, don't fret over it, Samuel? He didn't say it that way. He says, they haven't rejected you. They've rejected me. So what's all the things the king's going to take from the people? Everything, yeah, everything. He's going to take their sons, their daughters, their land, their servants, and their livestock. Do you still want a king? And when you complain about it, don't complain to me, because I told you not to do it.
Well, that's the ironic thing, because didn't they ask for this?
No, they demanded it. They didn't just ask. They demanded it. What's driving their decision? Are they thinking?
We want to be like the other nations.
Huh?
We want to be like the other nations.
Well, they want to be like the other nations. That's their rationale. To me, it was emotion. This is
fear.
Totally emotional.
Said fear.
The fear. It's emotional. This is an emotional response from the people. And God is trying to reason with them. Can you reason with somebody who's just totally emotional? You're wasting your time. What's driving? What is their fear?
They'll be conquered.
Will they be conquered?
Well, you got to look where they escaped from. They used to be under captivity, right?
Well, they used to be under captivity, but they're not now. They've been under. How much war have they had with the Philistines since Samuel came in as judge?
Well, they still know.
None. It's been at peace. But to me, Samuel's getting pretty old. It's been a while. Been quite a while, and his sons are. Two Cretans, okay? They're not good kids. And to me, I was trying to look for a reason maybe why they are where they are. You've got a little bit of, okay, this is a repeat with Eli. He had two rotten sons. Israel went away from God. Israel started being conquered. Samuel's going to die here soon. We've got to do something to fix this. What does that show? What does that show about their faith?
They're not relying on God.
They're not relying on God. That's we all get in that mode. You say, okay, God's not going to work this or not working this good enough. I got to do this for myself. And you see it all through the Bible. You see it with Abraham. Okay, I'm going to have a son? Okay, let me take it into my own hands because God's not working this. I think there's a little bit of that going on with these folks. What's the warning? I think Clayton alluded to it already. I alluded to it already, is to say, when you complain, when you whine, when you cry, I'm not going to listen to you.
Which
you asked for it.
Huh? Which is understandable because you asked for this. You tried to warn me and you asked for it.
You asked, actually you're demanding it. You're demanding a king. So, nevertheless, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel and they said, no, but there shall be a king over us. That we also may be like the other nations, the point you were making earlier. That our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Now after Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the Lord's hearing. The Lord said to Samuel, listen to their voice and appoint them a king. So Samuel said to the men, go every man to his city. So, we talked about it. What was the reasoning? What was the rationale? We want to be like everybody else. What's wrong with that reasoning?
Because they never win the battles. God wins them.
Yep. God's the one that led them. But they're not supposed to be like the other nations, are they? They're God's people. They're supposed to be unique. They're supposed to be different. But they want to be like everybody else. It's kind of like us. Everybody wants to be like everybody else, don't they? Does anybody want to stand out in a crowd when a crowd's got to point to them and say, look at that, that one there? Does anybody like to do that?
Well, maybe because we always think it's better on the other side.
Well, perhaps. But, you know, you can see the pressure, but that's the pressure we face with, that they face with. What they did was they caved.
they didn't realize they had a king that was God.
They didn't. They didn't. You know, and I'm sure Samuel has made that clear to them, is that your leader is God. But they rejected God. And God says, you rejected, they rejected me, they didn't reject you. And what was God's response?
Give him a king.
Give him a king. Go do it. What'd Samuel do?
Told him to go back to
town. Told him to go home. So go home. Well, he was going to do it, but, you know, did Samuel do anything without God first telling him what he needed to do? Samuel was so true to God through his whole life. I can't think of an example where Samuel went and did something that was just a little bit off of what God said. Samuel was true to God his entire life. What would you expect that Samuel had done as a person?
As appointing a king, you would expect them to appoint somebody that did him a favor. Like,
yeah, somebody right now. He said, go appoint one, go appoint him right now. And I guess this is a testament to Samuel to say, I'm going to wait for God to point me to the right person. Okay? Point someone immediately. So, now we're in chapter 9. So we've looked at the side that leading up to Samuel getting ready to appoint. Now we're going to look up the other side from the other perspective, which is Saul's. We're going fast. Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorath, the son of Aphtah, the son of a Benjamite, a mighty man of valor. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice and handsome man, and there was not a more handsome person than he among the sons of Israel. From his shoulders and up, he was taller than any of the people. So this is your first introduction.
So back then, Saul. You must have been handsome if you were tall.
I guess. I don't know. They said he was, it was and, so it was tied together. Where's the tribe of Benjamin located?
Within Judah.
Huh?
Within Judah.
Within Judah. No, Judah's a separate tribe. But it's right there by Judah.
I thought it was encapsulated within the land of Judah.
I don't know whether it's too far to the east to be encapsulated or not. It's right there. Right there in and around Jerusalem is where Benjamin is. Is it a big one? Uh-uh. No. How prominent is the tribe of Benjamin?
Not very.
Kurt's going.
I believe
not very.
It's, there was a prophecy, right, that from you, Benjamin, even though you're kind of the least of the tribes, out of you is going to come something great, right?
I'd have to look at where that prophecy is.
Yeah, I'll see if
who was Benjamin? That's not up there, but who was Benjamin?
He's the youngest son.
The youngest son.
Joseph's brother.
Of Jacob, huh?
Joseph's brother.
Joseph's little brother.
Yes.
Little brother, because he wasn't even born when Joseph got sent to Egypt. Okay. Kind of their prominence isn't very good. There was a Levite that's traveling home, and he stayed the night in Gibeah. It's a major city of Benjamin, and I'm going back into the time of Joshua. Kind of talk about how they felt about the tribe of Benjamin. A little bit of history. He didn't stay in somewhere else when he was traveling home. Now, what tribe was, what did the Levites do? Priests. So he's traveling back home. He didn't want to stop in an area that wasn't Jewish. So he made a special effort to get to Gibeah to stay the night with the Benjamites. This is out of Joshua. While they're all celebrating, and this is, the man finally found somewhere to stay in the town of Gibeah. Nobody else would give him any shelter. Now while they were celebrating, behold, the men of the city, certain worthless fellows, surrounded the house, pounding the door. And they spoke to the owner of the house, the old man, saying, "Bring out the man who came into your house, that we may have relations with him." Then the man, the owner of the house, went out to them and said to them, No, my fellows, please do not act so wickedly, since this man has come into my house. Do not commit this act of folly. Here is my virgin daughter and her concubine. Please let me bring them out, that you may ravish them and do them whatever you wish, but do not commit such an act of folly against this man." But the man would not listen to him, so the man seized his concubine, brought her out to them. They raped her, abused her all night and morning, then let her go to approach the dawn. As the day began to dawn, the woman came, fell down the door of the man's house, where her master was, until full daylight. She was dead when she got to the threshold. So this goes back quite a ways. These are Benjamites that are doing this. They've been influenced by the land, obviously. They're not following God. What happened was the Levite took the dead woman, cut her up into 11 pieces, and sent it to the 11 tribes. Said, "This is what they did." And they raised an army. And they almost erased the tribe of Benjamin from existence. And it happened in the town of Geba. So here's what happened, and you kind of read all the way through there. They went in against the people of Benjamin, and you can kind of read all the way down there into verse 46. They killed 25,000 men, and they stopped because they would have annihilated them. But this is out of Joshua. So this is the tribe of Benjamin that God's going to pick. The first leader that's a human to lead Israel. They also set fire to all the cities they found. So they really just razed Benjamin to the ground. So, going back to them, we talk about Kish. So what appears to be Saul's main credentials being the king?
He was taller than anybody.
He's tall and he's good looking. Yep. Tall and handsome. Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. So Kish said to his son Saul, "Take now with you one of the servants and arise. Go search for the donkeys." He passed through all the hill country, Ephraim, and passed through the land of Shalishah, but they did not find them. Then they passed through the land of Shalem, but they were not there. Then he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but they could not find them. What city do you think Saul was from? Geba, the one we just read about in Joshua. It's actually in 1 Samuel chapter 10 is where it talks about it. So he's from this city that caused the problem that the Benjamites almost got wiped out for. So what situation occurred that caused Saul to go searching the countryside?
Donkeys were lost.
Lost the donkeys. So go get the... And this could have been a lot of donkeys. I mean, you know, we look at donkeys today and we don't use them for very much. I can't ride on a donkey. If I got on it, it would sit down. It would refuse to move. If I got on a mule, I think it would sit down, actually. But... Yeah, this is a beast of burden that was very, very, very helpful. They rode them, they used them as pack animals. They were very valuable. So it was, you know, I had a friend of mine, and he had a ranch, and he had a donkey. And it was just there for amusement. You know, it was just kind of there to say, yeah, you got a donkey. You didn't do much of anything except for feed it and take care of it when it had some problem. But, yeah, donkeys were a big deal back in the day.
Now the ranchers are using one donkey with their cattle to run the coyotes off.
Really?
Yep. all over the West.
Well, we got coyotes here in this county.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How far do you think Saul and his servant had gone looking for donkeys?
Like quite a ways.
They went quite a ways, yeah. They went through Ephraim, and now they're down into Benjamin. Ephraim is kind of north of Judah, and Benjamin is kind of in the southeast part of just out of Judah. So, you know, they've gone quite a distance. When they came to the land of Zuph, Saul said to his servant who was with him, "Come, let us return, or else my father will cease to be concerned about the donkeys, and become anxious for us." He said to him, Behold now, there is a man of God in this city, and the man is held in honor. All that he says surely comes true. Now let us go there. Perhaps he can tell us about our journey on which we have set out." So they finally got all the way down to the area and around where they're at. And it's down Benjamin's to the southwest. Jerusalem's kind of in the south. I'm sorry, in the southeast. Jerusalem's in the southeast, part of Judah. You don't have to go too far. It's in the general area. Where's Zuph? Nobody knows where Zuph is. I had a hard time finding out where Zuph is. Zuph is a few miles northwest of Jerusalem. So they finally got to a place that's just a little bit a ways from Jerusalem. What's Saul ready to do? Huh?
He wants to go home.
His concern, at least the stated concern, is my dad's going to start to worry about us. He's going to think something happened to us. Because we've been looking. I mean, he's gone from Ephraim through Judah, down into Benjamin. Now he's come back up again. He's into Judah. He's been looking for those donkeys for a long time. And he's saying, my dad may be getting worried. Saul may be getting tired. And he's tired of looking for donkeys. I don't know. Who suggests an alternative? Servant. Okay. What's the alternative?
Let's go see this man of God. Maybe he can tell us something.
Yeah. Let's go see this man of God. Let's go. Maybe he can tell us where the donkeys are. Today, let's go see, I know a guy. Let's go see a guy in the city, and maybe he can help us out with what we're looking for.
I know a guy.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting the way they refer to him. Then Saul said to his servant, "Behold, if we go, what shall we bring to the man? Bring the man. For the bread is gone from our sack, and there is no present to bring to the man of God. What do we have?" The servant answered Saul again and said, "Behold, I have in my hand a fourth of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man, and he will tell us our way." Formerly in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, he used to say, "Come and let us go to the seer. For he who is called a prophet now was formerly called a seer. Then Saul said to the servant, "Well said, come, let us go." So they went into the city where the man of God was. So, here you've got Mutt and Jeff out looking for the donkeys. And they've got a quarter of a shekel of silver, and they got no food. So, and that kind of indicates how long they've been out looking for these donkeys. Whatever they brought with them, it's just about all gone. Saul, I have any idea who this man is? Servant seems to know more than Saul does, doesn't he? He brings up the idea. He knows he's a man of God, doesn't much else. How long Samuel's been judge in Israel, do you think? If he's old, his eyes are dim, maybe in his 70s, maybe in his 80s. When did his mom bring him to the priesthood? When he was weaned? 3? So probably for about 70 plus years. He's been a judge and a prophet of Israel. And it doesn't appear Saul knows who he is, does it? He's kind of living in his own world. Okay, what's a fourth of a shekel worth? It's silver. So there's, you know, it's a good coin, but it was a coin at the time, a coin that they coined in, I guess, Israel that they used for exchange. I looked it up. It was worth, it said $2.50, about $2 to $5. So they're going to go give this guy $2 to $5. That's all they got. But $2 to $5 to go tell him where the donkeys are. That's their plan. As they went up the slope to the city, they found young women going out to draw water and said to them, "Is the seer here?" They answered them and said, "He is. See, he is ahead of you. Hurry now, for he has come into the city today. For the people have a sacrifice on the high place today. As soon as you enter the city, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. For the people will not eat until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterward, those who are invited will eat. Now therefore, go up for your own, for you will find him at once." So they went up to the city. As they came into the city, behold, Samuel was coming out toward them to go up to the high place. So Samuel's doing what? Would you kind of call that business as usual? He's not going out seeking who the next leader is, he? He's going up to offer sacrifice. It's what he does. He goes around. Remember, he had a circuit that he set up? I don't know if this is part of the circuit or not, but he did the judging, but he also did the sacrificing for major events and things like that. But he went around and did the circuit sacrificing for the people. And so this is a part of his normal thing that he goes on and doing, is offering up the sacrifice. That's a lot of work for someone that's probably the age he is. So, you know, Samuel's probably not moving too fast. So he's offering sacrifice in this area that's just a little bit, a few miles away from Jerusalem. You got to have in there a little bit where also the people are saying, what are they waiting for? They're waiting to eat, but they're waiting, they want to eat. Huh? He's got to have the sacrifice first and then the blessing before they eat. Did Saul ever have a problem with that? Remember what got him in trouble? "Samuel, you didn't make it here in time for the sacrifice. Everybody was leaving. I went ahead and did the sacrifice. I had to do it myself because you weren't here." Okay. So he's going to have a run-in in the future with Samuel because he can't wait. These people are waiting, which is what God wanted. You think this is a chance meeting?
No.
Seriously doubt it. Doesn't say, but I seriously doubt it.
Now we could see that, but they couldn't.
No, they had no clue. They saw this guy coming up. When the ladies that were there, they said, "There he is, right there." And he probably went, "Okay." You know, Samuel, by this time, he's old. He's probably a little bent over. And you got this guy, good-looking tall guy, standing there going, "Okay, maybe he can help us find our donkeys." Because that's where his head is. You think Samuel suspects how the day is going to end up? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure he does. He suspects something's going to happen, because God may have told him something, but I'm not sure he knows just exactly how much this is going to unfold the way it does. Because remember how he had to go find Saul. Hiding. Now a day before Saul's coming, the Lord had revealed this to him, saying, "About this time tomorrow, I will send a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall appoint him to be prince over my people. And he will deliver my people from their hand of the Philistines, for I have regarded my people because their cry has come to me." So he knew something was going to go on today, just didn't know exactly what it was. He knew he'd be prince. How specific, though, was his direction?
Appoint him prince.
Okay. And he's going to be coming from Benjamin.
He tells him about the time that will happen.
About the what?
He says tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So he gave him the timing. And he says he's going to be coming from Benjamin. So he knows it's coming. But there could have been a lot of people coming up from Benjamin. What's Samuel's responsibility?
Doesn't he got to anoint him king?
Anoint him king? We got time. We got lots of time. To anoint the man. Kind of interesting. What will be this king's responsibility?
My people.
He'll be prince over my people.
And he'll keep them safe.
And keep them safe. That's the biggest thing. Of course, that's what they asked for. They said, "We want a king like everybody else has a king that leads the battle." Because that was kind of interesting. In that time, the king led the army in battle. I mean, he was out there on the front line running the battle.
Process.
He does. Eventually. Sometimes in spite of us. But you had a unique position for a king back then. He didn't sit off somewhere else and direct what was going on. He was there in person. And part of the reason a lot of leaders were successful in becoming kings is because they were excellent military people. But his job was to deliver the people from the Philistines. How did God give that title? What was his title?
Prince.
Not king. Prince. Prince to who?
Prince over his people. Prince over his people.
He's prince, but to who? To God.
My people from the land of the Philistines.
He's my prince. He's a prince to me. Okay. How had God spoken to the people up until this particular time when they came back to the land of Canaan?
What do you mean? By what medium?
He didn't talk to all the people at the same time. He did that when they first came out of Egypt, and they went, "That's too much for us. We can't do that anymore."
So how? Through prophets.
Through prophets, okay. How's he going to talk now?
Through the prince.
And they started down a path with a king or prince that every time you had a good king, Israel went down the right path, and when you had a bad king, they went down a really wrong path. You know, Jezebel and Ahab were two that stand out as far as leaders in Israel that led Israel down a path that was a dark path. But you had good kings, bad kings, led them down the right path. But the relationship to the people was through the king, and the responsibility for leading them in God, with God, as their prince was supposed to do, was going to be the king.
There was still a healthy amount of work through prophets too, throughout the times of the kings.
But what were those prophets
even
doing?
Even after the land was divided.
That's true. But what were those prophets? Who do those prophets usually go talk to?
The king.
The king.
Yeah.
Okay. Said, "Hey, See what you're doing? Even, you know, David had them going to him. You had Jeremiah, the wailing prophet, who the king threw in prison because he didn't like what he was saying. So you had prophets all the way up to John, who was a prophet. And the king didn't like what he was having to say, and the king's wife really didn't like what she was having to say, so she had his head cut off. So, and then you have Christ talk about the prophets. How did Christ say how Israel treated the prophets? You abused them, okay? These people were bringing the word of God, and all you did was abuse them. Samuel, man of God. How did they treat him? Probably better than most, but yes, still. They didn't listen to him, did they?
No, they kept demanding
things. They kept demanding things. They didn't listen to him.
No.
They still didn't listen to him. So next week, Doug, I think, is going to bring to us where actually he gets to the point where he anoints Saul. Questions? Comments? We got time. You can kind of see the frustration sometimes with God, and he gave them what they asked for. And sometimes we'll ask for things and gives us what we ask for and may not be the best thing. Hezekiah asked for 10 more years. How'd he do? Remember Hezekiah? He pleaded for 10 more years. He did okay, but he didn't do as well as when he first started. He was a good king.
It's always amazing to me how patient God has been with his people.
And us. All of his people.
All of us. Yeah.
How patient he is. And he says, it's not what you're really going to want. You're going to not like what you're asking for. You're not going to like. But I'll give it to you. If that's what you really, really want, that's what I'll give it to you.
Yeah, we understand that. You know, we do. How many of us have said the same thing to our own children? You know, my boys ask me stuff. Hey, can I do this? Like, you can go ahead and do it, but I'm telling you, if you like walk across the top of the playground set, for example, you know, if you fall, it's gonna hurt.
It's gonna hurt.
Don't cry to me. Now, you've been warned.
Yeah. And then as a father, same like the father here,
yes.
What he does, you go pick him up, you cradle him, you figure out what's wrong, you help him fix it, and like that.
Yeah, I've said it numerous times. You know, having children has opened my eyes up to the ways of God and more into his character and mindset and thought process. Because when you see things like this, you know, it's like, man, I've said the exact same thing to my own children.
Yeah, my dad had a favorite line. He's the son, when you're dumb, you got to be tough. And sometimes we do things, you're right. You know, and sometimes when you're in the midst of doing it, you're going, this is not a smart thing to do.
And you got to give them free will because that's part of the process. They have to learn on their own that they had a king.
Well, sometimes you don't have to experience everything to learn. Sometimes you can look at it and say, I take advice. Huh?
If you ask for something, God will give you what you ask for, but there'll be consequences because he's trying to teach you a lesson.
Not always. Not always. In this particular case, he wasn't trying to teach him a lesson. He was just saying, this is a consequence. This is what's going to happen when you get your own king. Is when you get your own king, you're going to complain to me because, gee, this king is asking for our sons and our daughters and our land and our money and our crops. And, oh, this is terrible. We ought not to do this. And God's going to say, don't tell me.
Two ways you learn. Making mistakes and listening to people who've made those same mistakes.
Yeah, and it's a whole lot easier if you listen to someone who made that mistake and try and learn from it. It's just
who listens?
Some people do.
Not much.
Some people do. Some, as we get smarter, sometimes we get, you know, we begin to listen. But yeah, sometimes we gotta, okay, you made a mistake when you tried it, but I won't make that same mistake.
Oh yeah.
And we walk right into the trap. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
got well when she went home. Then she, shortly after she got home, she was PIA. So she's now back at the hospital. And she's probably, on the day that it almost was her 85th birthday.
How we doing? Yeah, you have.
I have.
Joe was with us.
My brother's Joe is.
Oh, yes, that's him.
It's his.
We didn't have a big pressure chain with this front.
That keeps everything good set on and off. It's too bad.
I'm going to have my trailer ready. Tell get some pressure.
Yeah. It's almost healed. They said it's gonna get like down to something like that. Probably won't take a little change from the bucket.
I think that's
really easy. Yeah. The platform, the grabber, it won't even be here last night about any trash. The grabber was going to
It's crooked.